Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Loughlin. At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
He is sacked. He is brought down by Kiko Alonso. And there's your ball game.
That's game time right there. That's game time right there.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
10-yard line, 5, into the end zone. Touchdown, Leonis, my man!
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football, right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Chris Brown filling in on the John Murphy Show tonight, and with me this evening will be Bills wide receiver Kevin Elliott to discuss OTAs at 7:30, and then at 8 p.m. tonight, Bills Digest editor Mark Ludwizak as we get his insight on what he's seen on the practice field during OTAs. That and your phone calls coming up next.
This place is pandemonium. Down to the one, into the end zone, touchdown, Fred Jackson. Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And good evening, and welcome to the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO here on this Wednesday evening, June 11th, 2014. Chris Brown here, coming to you live from One Bills Drive, and obviously filling in for John Murphy, who is under the weather this week. We had Murph's broadcast partner Mark Kelso step in for him on Monday with an assist from Paul Peck. On Tuesday, it was Brian Koziol stepping behind the microphone, and I will be handling tonight and Thursday night for Murph here on Buffalo Bills Radio. We certainly wish him a speedy recovery. News of the day. Here at One Bills Drive today, players had meetings here on Wednesday as part of their third week of organized team activities. And everyone here was fully expecting a practice, but that did not happen. And being just down the hall from the meeting rooms here at the facility, we kind of heard meetings breaking up around 9:30, as they usually do. And then all of a sudden, there was a convoy of players leaving the building and getting on buses. So we saw that, and I had tweeted around that time, I am sensing a team bonding day. And that proved to be the case. Head coach Doug Marrone canceling practice, taking the players out to the airsoft paintball range for some team building. It's become a common practice, really, of most NFL coaches. Doug Marrone said he did not want to go to four straight days on the practice field as they had scheduled this week. So this team outing replaced practice. Then they returned for some more meetings before breaking for the day in the early afternoon. So a pass today for the Bills on the practice field. They will get back at it tomorrow with a 10:30 practice scheduled, and that will close out week three, the final week of OTAs, and then we have the mandatory minicamp next week from Tuesday through Thursday. But tonight on the show, we'll talk to Bills receiver Kevin Elliott at 7:30, find out a little bit of what went on out there with some of the team building activities that took place today. We'll also talk to him about his return to the field after tragically tearing an ACL last summer in the preseason. That really cost him a chance at a job on the roster, and we'll see where he feels his chances lie now. We're also going to break down some of the individual play thus far in the OTA practices tonight, and I'll have Mark Ludwizak, the editor of Bills Digest, on at 8:05 tonight to share his impressions of the play on the practice field to this point. And then I'll also provide you with, you know, a list of players that I feel have performed very well this spring and who have helped themselves as far as their standing goes on this Bills roster. And obviously, we'll take your phone calls. Feel free to tweet in as well, whether you're tweeting us in here at John Murphy Show or me directly. That's fine. We'll try to get some of the more poignant comments on and maybe get some feedback from some other fans out there. But we'll take any and all questions that you may have, too. I've been at all the OTA practices, so if you have any questions about individual players, how they're doing, position battles, line combinations, happy to cover it all with you as we quickly approach the mandatory minicamp next week. 803-0550 is the phone number, 1-888-550-2550 if you are calling from out of town. And really where I wanted to lead off tonight was with EJ Manuel. something I blogged on BuffaloBills.com concerning EJ earlier this week, which is where he basically confirmed that he's going to have a little more freedom in running Buffalo's offense this season. So first, what I'm going to do is play you the comments that he made when he was asked about some of the offensive struggles that have happened on the field, some of the responsibility he has now taken on in year two of running this offense.
I would say from the last game of last season to now, way far, way further. I think, you know, we've earned that responsibility, that ability to change plays, you know, from Coach Hackett and, you know, not have him second guess what we're doing. I think he trusts us a lot more, or trusted me a lot more, to get us in the right play. And, you know, obviously in a game it's easier because you have a game plan, you have things that you will check into, and then practice is kind of all over the place. But, you know, I definitely feel a lot better with my grasp of the offense. And I think sometimes that's why I get frustrated, because I know it's there. And if we have, you know, one misstep and it's not there and it doesn't complete, that's frustrating. You know, I try to pride myself on knowing it so well, but you just got to keep rolling with the punches.
So what EJ is referencing there is the ability to change plays at the line pre-snap, and how he apparently has greater freedom in doing so this year as opposed to his rookie season. Now, naturally, as a rookie, the reins were going to be considerably tighter on EJ, I think, as we all expected. But now it sounds like offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett's going to allow him to execute these package plays, which have really become a lot more popular in the NFL, and he can take a run play and check to a quick-hitting pass or run read option, depending on what he sees from the defense, whether it be number of defenders that he sees sitting in the box, to the positioning of the safeties, etc. So the question here for you at 803-0550 is, do you think EJ has been given the so-called keys to the car and have that freedom for this offense? Does he need that freedom for this offense to be successful in 2014? It's obvious that Hackett trusts him, and he's done this before. I mean, he did this when he was at Syracuse with Coach Marone, where they kind of changed the approach of the offense and went to these packaged plays where the quarterback has the jurisdiction to change it at the line. If the run looks like a losing play, he can shift on the fly and switch to a better play, which, you know, is usually a quick hitting pass. It's rare that these go downfield for big things, but it puts them in a more advantageous play to get positive yardage and stay in positive down and distance. So with EJ now seemingly getting the keys to the car, does this offense need that to be more successful? I mean, there's been a big-time effort to surround him with top-flight talent, but ultimately he's going to be the one making the decisions at the line. How does this all sit with you? 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. From what I've seen, EJ knows this offense, and you even heard him in his comments that we just played for you, that he prides himself on knowing the offensive system like the back of his hand. And we've heard it from his teammates to this point that they feel he has command of the offense, is more authoritative in the huddle. I talked to a couple of receivers the first week of OTAs, one of them being Robert Woods, and he said it's even coming out of his mouth better. Just the way he's even saying the plays is exuding confidence in their opinion. So I think EJ's prided himself on having a firm grasp of the offensive system, and so what you have is a guy that I think knows it backwards and forwards and has proven to his coaches that if he needs to make a change on the fly, he knows what to check to based on what he sees pre-snap. And at least from what I've seen in the OTA setting, he's known what to check to, and he's done this coming out of a huddle situation. He's done it in a hurry-up situation. He's done it in a two-minute drill situation. And I think we all recognize the fact that OTA practice is not a game. It is different. You know, the pressure situations are different. I think his only hesitation at times is coming when he's reading the coverages. Pre-snap, he looks very confident, very assertive, and he communicates it as such with his body language on the field and also with his gesturing to teammates out wide, whether it's a receiver or someone else, you know, off the line that he's signaling to. So EJ running the show, having more freedom in the offense? Tell me what you think. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. I will say this. There's been a lot of talk out there about the struggles of the offense the last couple of days, and I thought EJ explained why some of that is happening pretty well. I mean, he pretty much stated that in previous weeks, the install process has been little by little, taking small steps forward with a finite number of plays going in with each passing day of practice. Starting this week, though, from the way he put it, the coaches threw the offensive playbook at the offense and said, we're putting as much in as possible in advance of the mandatory minicamp. So obviously when you increase the volume, it's going to compromise execution at times, and I think we saw that on Monday and Tuesday out on the practice field for this offense. At the same time, I think we got to remember this. When they're practicing during the regular season, you know, a game plan is being installed, and the play count is anywhere from 50 to 60 plays based on the conversation I had with Eric Wood the other day. And in these practices, which are running at an up-tempo pace as Coach Hackett wants to do this season, they're arguably running twice as many plays in the hour and a half to 2 hour practice that's going on. So you consider all of those factors, and you also consider the fact that pre-snap, the defense knows what they're running and they're not changing it. And the offense is reacting to a defense where they do not know what is coming while also trying to execute 10 first and 10 plays in a row so the coaches can see what they like and what they don't like. I think we come to the realization that all is not going to be perfect in that kind of a setting for the offense, especially the first week in which they're seeing that kind of volume coming through the play call sheet. So I'm trying to keep that in mind myself, because watching the offense on Tuesday, I was thinking, okay, let's try to see how many positive plays they can string together. And admittedly, those plays were limited. And it was hard for me to keep reminding myself of that based on what EJ had told us. So it's a balance. It's a work in progress. And I think we all know the offense takes longer to come around than the defense. I think there's a sentiment out there, though, on the part of fans that the defense is maybe not necessarily going to be ahead because it's a new scheme coming in. But I just think defense operates different from offense. And I think we got some good insight in the conversation I had with Eric Wood, which appeared on the show a couple of days ago, about how it all fits together and why it does take so much time. 803-0550, the number, 1-888-550-2550. You want to weigh in on this EJ situation and him kind of having full reins. Do you think he's ready to handle all of that? I mean, this is a question that some people have had coming in. I mean, we heard all the way in the pre-draft months, hey, we should draft a quarterback to back this guy up in case things don't pan out. You know, obviously the team has a much different stance. They are all in with EJ. There's no backing down from that. And I think what Nathaniel Hackett, the offensive coordinator, is doing here is proof positive of that. This is a guy that's saying, here you go. We're going to give you the full slate and let's see how you execute it coming into this season. And to this point, it's early. And we haven't seen it all yet. But like I said, to me, pre-snap, this guy's got his head on straight and he knows what he's doing. So I think what we've got here is a guy that's working his way through it. But I think as far as pre-snap goes, he knows what he's doing. It's after the snap, I think, where people still have question marks. And even EJ admittedly has said himself, my job here in the OTAs is to clear the hurdle of effectively reading coverages inside and out. 803-0550, the number. Let's go to the phones. We're going to lead off tonight with Carl in Clarence. Carl, thanks for being with us. You're on the John Murphy Show.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for taking order for him. Hey, I'm not sold on EJ. He reminded me a lot of Fitzpatrick, except for maybe his long ball's a little better. But some passes are super crisp, and others are like 5 yards away. How can this be?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of look at some of that myself, and I wonder, because, you know, you think about some of the physical attributes of EJ's game, and the guy had some of the biggest hands in the quarterback class coming out last year. I mean, his hands are 10 5/8 inches from pinky to thumb, end to end, And when you have hands that size, the consistency at which the ball should come out of your hand should be spiral every time. When you have hands that size, and your ball should cut through the wind no problem, because you can put torque on the ball also when you have hands that big. And yes, there have been, you know, some passes that have been off the mark, and I know a lot of fans always like to reference the Week 3 game against the Jets from last season, but I think by the same token, there have been games where he has been spot on. And I think what we saw last year is kind of par for the course when it comes to a rookie. So I understand why you're not sold on AJ Carroll, but I think part of the problem there is we haven't seen enough to have truly come down on one side of the fence or the other. I mean, it's 10 starts, you know, and so for me, I think we need more of a book here. Obviously, the Bills coaching staff doesn't have the luxury of just automatically switching gears and going to an alternative. They invested in EJ. They're all in on EJ, and that's the direction they're going to take. And I think taking this step and giving him the additional freedoms to call this stuff pre-snap at the line is very telling with the path that they are taking. And they obviously feel he is ready to handle those decisions. I'm just wondering if you folks feel he is. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 if you're calling from out of town. I also wonder if these kinds of packaged plays are necessary if this offense is going to be successful. The Bills aren't the only team in the league that take this approach. I mean, basically, what they do is, you know, they go to one play, they can change it, and there are other teams in the league that took this approach last year. Philadelphia was one of them with Chip Kelly. I know that in Kansas City, Andy Reid did some of that. I think there were two or three other teams that pretty much handled packaged plays in their offense at times. Thanks very much for the call, Carl. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 to get on board here. And we're talking EJ and your thoughts about him having freedom to make calls on package plays at the line, something he did not have nearly the freedom to do last year. And the approach last year that Hackett took, I thought, was the right one. Basically, what he did was he gave him a little more rope with each passing week. Provided there was a positive performance, he'd give him a little more rope the next week. And I think after we saw the opener against New England, where he played very effectively, I think what we saw there was a guy that got a little more rope in week two. And then whenever he did not perform maybe up to his expectations, Coach Hackett's expectations, they took a step back. Not a giant one, but they just curbed things a little bit going into the next week in an effort to try and maintain progress. So they sacrificed volume for efficiency. And then unfortunately, EJ gets hurt in week five, and you know, the whole path that he was supposed to take in his rookie season kind of goes off the rails. So here we are in year two now, and they're trying to put more on his plate now here in the spring so he's capable of executing come September. And, you know, I think when you look at what he's done to this point in OTAs, for those of us that have seen him out there on the field, I don't think pre-snap is an issue for a second. I think where he's still trying to clear some hurdles is after the snap of that ball. And one of the main reasons why is because a lot of the defensive looks he's getting in practice this year are in stark contrast to that of last year. And so when you roll that into the equation, I think he's got to get accustomed to a lot of the cover two looks that he's seeing now, which is something that was almost completely foreign to the Mike Pettine defense of a year ago. And so now that's what you have, a guy adjusting to more defensive looks that are more conservative and trying to keep everything in front of them so they don't give up anything cheap or anything deep. So it's something that we're just going to have to keep on monitoring and see when the light bulb goes off as far as post-snap play. Let's go back to the phones at 803-0550. We're going to go to Mason in Knoxville, Tennessee. Mason, you're on the John Murphy Show. Good evening. Doing okay.
Hey, you know what? I'm a big fan of yours, but I'm a naturally optimistic fan, to say the least. But I'm always, my friends and my family always try to temper me with saying, well, you know, Chris Brown, he works for the Buffalo Bills. Obviously, he's biased for his team. He's going to try to put a positive spin in any kind of bad news that a arises, but I've been a diehard, and I've been following OTAs. I follow every offseason news. And I'm just wondering, can you really gauge anything from the OTAs, considering that EJ's been handed the full playbook and he's trying to get some chemistry growing with his young receivers? Is it really, I say, realistic to gauge anything from OTAs, or is it just more of trying to figure out where unheralded players will fit in the team or which players are going to rise to the occasion? Is it more of a litmus test for EJ? Is it more of a litmus test to see which players fit into the scheme?
Yeah, I know what you're asking here, Mason. I appreciate the phone call along with your readership. So I think what we've got here is a situation where in OTAs, when you don't have pads, gauging line play, the physical play, and the battles that take place at the line of scrimmage, those are just completely out the window and unrealistic. What you can gauge to a certain extent is skill position play to a degree. Because you've got DBs that you can see their athleticism, how they can turn and run with receivers, but they do not have the opportunity to really press like they would in pads at the line of scrimmage. And so you might have a player that looks like an all-star. I'll tell you right now, every single spring, Roscoe Parrish looked like an unstoppable wide receiver. Then we would get to training camp, DBs are in pads, and so is he, and they can press him at the line, and then suddenly he's not as effective. So I think you do have to temper your expectations this time of year to the plus side and to the negative side. And so with that in mind, you know, I think it is wise to withhold full judgment on what a player can or cannot do. I'll tell you right now, Chris Hogan looks like an all-star out there in May here, or in May and June. But in training camp, my question is he going to be able to get off press coverage when we're all in pads? Let's see what happens. So there's a guy that I feel good about, but I'm withholding judgment on. And I think with EJ, the biggest thing you can tell with him is his mental processing. I thought Coach Hackett put it very well the other day when he said, hey, I can tell right away, I don't have to look at anybody else on the field, whether EJ knows what he's looking at and knows what he wants to do with the football. So I think some of us on the sidelines, even though we don't have the trained eye of the coaching staff and we're not watching the play unfold from behind the line of scrimmage just like Coach Hackett is and just like EJ is as he drops back, I think you can read EJ's body language and tell whether he knows where he's going with the football or whether he might be a little crossed up on a certain play and ends up tucking it and running. So there are degrees of evaluation that can happen here in the OTA setting. And there are some things that simply just have to wait for training camp. But, Mason, I thank you for the call. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Troy in Mississippi, hang on. If you want, we'll try to get you through the break and get to you when we can. 803-0550, the phone number. We're talking EJ and OTAs. But coming up here at 7:30, it'll be wide receiver Kevin Elliott on the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Chris Brown here with you, sitting in for John Murphy on the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Talking some EJ Manuel tonight, now that he has a little more freedom in this offense to change plays at the line. That's the words that came out of his mouth earlier this week, so we're kind of chewing on that a little bit this evening. We're talking OTAs. And now we're going to talk to one of the players that has been participating in those very OTAs. Live on the line with us tonight is Bills wide receiver Kevin Elliott. Kevin, thanks for coming on the show tonight. We appreciate the time.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me.
Sure thing. So what was the reaction today when the players found out that instead of going on to the practice field, you guys were headed to the paintball range?
Yeah, it was real surprising. You know, it was a good team bonding trip. And I think everybody's mindset was ready to go to practice, so yeah, I think everybody was pretty much surprised.
Yeah. So what did – I mean, Coach Marone, as we all know, is a no-nonsense guy. So what was what did he say, you know, in revealing where you guys were headed today?
Well, we knew it was kind of weird at the beginning when we had a meeting at 9:15. So when we got in there, he was just like, you know, we've been doing a good job, and we're not going to practice today, and we're going to go – do the paintball thing as a team. And, you know, the whole room, you know, we got excited and started talking and yelling.
And then how competitive did things get out there?
Oh, man, very competitive. I think everything we do is competitive. Me and a couple of the players, we go bowling a lot, and that's very competitive. So I knew as soon as you said that it was going to be a lot of trash talking and a lot of competitiveness in the paintball.
Yeah, I believe it. All right, Kevin Elliott with us, Bills wide receiver. Kevin, let's get to football now. And you are finally back on the field after a lengthy rehab from a torn ACL. How does it feel to be running routes again?
Oh, man, that's a blessing. I'll tell anybody any day, you know, I'd rather practice than rehab. Rehab is not something you want to do. And when I first got clear to start cutting and running routes, I was like a kid at the candy store, man. I couldn't wait to get out there and start putting in work.
So when did you get full clearance to kind of resume football activities?
About a month before OTA started, before I came back to Buffalo. So I had a good month, you know, to get my knee a little bit stronger or back used to getting the pressure put on it as I cut and start, you know, working in the running routes, not full speed, but working the top of the routes and things of that nature. And I'm still not 100% where I want to be yet, but, you know, I've been pushing through this OTAs, and I'll definitely be 100% when I get back for training camp.
Yeah. I mean, not to make you relive it, but, I mean, you had a strong spring last year in OTAs, and you looked like you were going to be a factor in training camp, and it looked like you had a decent shot at one of the last receiver spots on the roster in 2013. And then in that second preseason game against Minnesota, I mean, it was really a non-contact injury, right? I mean, you didn't run into anybody on that.
Not at all. I mean, I was running down kickoff. I planted real hard, and it just buckled on me. You know, I was pretty much disappointed at the beginning. You know, I came with the hands for a reason, and it was definitely a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, the timing worked out right in terms of you getting back and being ready for OTAs here and now. Did you rehab, though, here in Buffalo at all last season? Because I thought I saw you watch and practice a good deal late last season during the week. And were you in the meetings, too?
Yeah, I had my surgery and most of my rehab down in Miami.
Okay.
And they brought me back up for the last four games of the season. And, you know, it's so great being back around the team and around my teammates and everything.
Now, having missed all that time with the quarterbacks on the field, I understand you caught up with EJ and the other receivers in some of these off-season camps that you guys and the players organized, right? Did you make it to California and Florida?
No, I just made it to Florida. You know, me and EJ actually rehabbed at the same facility down in Miami.
Okay.
So we were pretty much going through the same process, and at the same time, when I was clear to start running routes, me and him, you know, we started a little earlier, getting the communication and the timing down. And, you know, then we had the opportunity to have a couple of receivers come down to Miami, and, you know, we just put in some more work then, and it was a good time.
Kevin Elliott, our guest, Bills wide receiver on the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. What do you think you guys really got out of those player-run camps? I think for you individually, you know, you were making up for lost time, but as a group, what do you feel you got out of those player-run camps?
Definitely building a relationship off the field. You know, getting to know each other, getting to sit around, just talk with each other, hang out, and that definitely correlates to our relationship on the field, you know, and just talking about the plays, you know, talking about how, you know, we think this should be run and how we like to what balls, you know, that we expect on these certain type of routes and just things of that nature that I'm pretty sure is going to really help us out in the season this year.
So what did you see out of EJ maybe in that setting that perhaps you didn't see out of him as a rookie last year? And I know your exposure to him was limited because of your injury, but the common comment that I seem to be getting from a lot of the players concerning EJ this year as opposed to last is he's just more authoritative with everything that he's doing at quarterback. What do you see?
Definitely that, and his confidence. You know, he was, I don't want to say he was unsure, but you could tell, you know, he wants to get better and he wants to do better for the team, and his confidence is definitely showing. He's being a more vocal as a leader as well. And, you know, he wants us to do better, so he's helping us all out. You know, if we have a problem with certain plays, he's helping us out. We're doing extra work, you know, going over the plays and everything. So he's really just filling that leadership role as he should.
We were asking him the other day about finding the balance between being the calm, cool, collected guy under pressure that a quarterback needs to be, while also being able to recognize when the offensive unit might need a kick in the rear, you know, to get everybody going again. He said that the way he likes to do it is by building players up, building teammates up, not tearing them down. He says, I'll let the coaches get on the players for that. What do you think of that approach?
I mean, that's a good approach. I mean, I don't think any player likes when another player talks down on them. And say you drop a pass or, you know, you miss your assignment, he's always like, next play, don't worry about it. We'll coach it up in the film room, you know, and that's why we practice, to work on those type of things. So he's definitely doing a good job with that, and at the same time, he's right. It's the coach's job to, you know, give us that constructive criticism. And as well, you know, the vets do the same thing, but they don't ever talk down on us, you know. They don't ever make us feel bad or whatever, so... Mostly just motivation, man. If you knock somebody down or talk somebody down during the game or whatever, it's not going to boost their confidence. At the end of the day, you want their confidence to still be the same level, and he's doing a great job with that.
Bills wide receiver Kevin Elliott is our guest here on the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. So, you know, you guys have these package plays that Coach Hackett has in the offense. What are your thoughts about EJ handling stuff pre-snap? Because, again, I'm going to go back to that word, you know, being authoritative, being assertive. It seems, at least on the practice field, looking at it from the sideline, and granted it's somewhat of an untrained eye, that he seems to have complete control of what he needs to turn to if he's got to change something at the line. Have you found him to be pretty consistent with that?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, it was pretty overwhelming at first, but, you know, everybody had to put the work in and you know, get in the playbook. And he's been doing a very good job of noticing blitzes, noticing different fronts, and communicating that with the receivers. And, you know, we still got a lot of work to do, but we've definitely been making strides every day to get better.
Yeah. At 6'3", 205, and forgive me if you've added some lean muscle that hasn't been recorded on the roster sheet yet, you know, you're a big enough target. But at the same time, you, as well as everybody else, can see how deep the position is at receiver. Last year, you saw Marcus Easley make this roster largely because of his special teams prowess, and he had a heck of a year on special teams last year. Now, I was doing a little homework on you, and I saw you played special teams in college at Florida A&M, which is not super common for a lot of guys that play at this level coming out of college. They're usually, you know, top-end receivers on their college team, and they're usually kept off a special team. So how many units were you on at A&M?
I just really did kickoff. You know, I feel like I had a defensive side to me, and that was my way to let it out. I really took pride in being the first one down there, disrupting plays and, like, you know, scoring a touchdown and being the first one down and making a touchdown. I really took pride in that, so... You know, that really helped me out in my transition coming to the NFL, because I already had that defensive mind and that special teams in me.
Yeah, I mean, that's an obvious benefit there for you. And I got to believe the coaching staff, you know, they're doing their homework. They know you have a background on special teams, and why not plug you in? And, you know, as you guys know, you know, if you're trying to fight for one of those last receiver spots, you better be able to do something else. So, I mean, they had you on those units last year, you know, going into camp and into the preseason. How did the whole special teams role come about for you, though, at the college level first?
I really did it on my – I started since the first year I played, my redshirt freshman year. And actually my very first game on kickoff, I went down there and forced a fumble. And ever since then, they never took me off kickoff, and I've been doing it ever since.
That probably left a good taste in your mouth, too, I'm thinking.
Yeah, most definitely. So that pretty much carried over. And I always, you know, I've always liked playing defense. Like, I've always liked the contact. I always liked hitting people. So That pretty much helped me out, and that helps me out as a receiver as well in route running and blocking.
And then how many units does Coach Crossman have you on now? Are you on kickoff now?
Yes, sir. I'm pretty much on every unit right now.
All four? Okay.
Not a problem. Yes, sir, because I did it my rookie year in Jacksonville as well.
Okay. And I know you'll line up anywhere, but where do you feel you can help on special teams the most? I mean, do you feel kickoff is still your bread and butter on special teams?
I've fallen more towards the gunner side on punt.
Okay.
I really excelled in that my rookie year. And me and Easley out there on other opposite sides of each other, that could be real scary, you know.
yeah.
I can still run down there and kick off and everything. And, you know, kickoff return and punt return are still something I'm getting better at every day. So definitely gunner on punt is my specialty right now.
Oh, good enough. Well, listen, Kevin, we appreciate the time joining us here on the show tonight. And it's certainly nice to see you back out there running routes. You know, hopefully you can finish what you started last year at this time. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having me.
All right. That's Kevin Elliott, Bills wide receiver, back on the practice field after coming back off a lengthy rehab from a torn ACL. We are going to take a break, but when we come back, we'll discuss how EJ deals with staying even-keeled as the quarterback while also maintaining a level of intensity for his offensive unit. That's next on the John Murphy Show, presented by Noco. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Chris Brown back with you on the John Murphy Show, filling in for Murph as he recovers from being under the weather. We certainly wish Murph a speedy recovery, get him back out here on the air soon. But in the meantime, we press on with you at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. As we just got off the line there with Kevin Elliott, Bills wide receiver, back on the field, coming back from a torn ACL, and doing pretty well. This was a guy that was turning some heads last year at this time and then unfortunately tore that ACL in the second preseason game against Minnesota last August. But he's back and trying to kind of reclaim his status as an upstart in the receiving core. And at 6'3", 205, he certainly has the size. And as we discussed with him, he has a special teams background. So he has a dual role that he can offer this football team, and he actually kind of painted an interesting picture saying him and Marcus Easley coming down on kickoff together, and we know Easley was among the league-leading tacklers on special teams in the entire NFL in 2013. Seeing those two guys coming down the field, a 6'2", 225-pound guy and a 6'3", 205-pound guy, that's pretty good when you can bring that, especially at the receiver position. So it'd be interesting to see how things pan out for him as we move our way through the mandatory minicamp next week and then obviously into training camp. But we are also talking about EJ Manuel and your thoughts about him having what sounds like more freedom to make calls on those packaged plays at the line of scrimmage, changing out of one play or changing out of one option on a play and going to another option in some of those packaged plays that Coach Hackett has in the Buffalo Bills offense. Waiting patiently on the line has been Troy in Ocean Springs, Mississippi. And Troy, thanks for holding on. You think EJ can handle the play calling. Tell me why.
Just because it seems like whenever he's going at a fast pace, and I think that's what they're going to do. And from college, whenever he was doing it that way, he's always thrived with doing that. So I think it's going to be a better situation for him this year than it was even last year. Plus, he's got the knowledge of the offense underneath the year. So I think that's going to benefit him tremendously.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, Troy, and thanks for the call. And I will tell you this, you are dead on about the fact that the offense is going to resume their up-tempo approach. I think for those fans that may not have heard the comments of Coach Hackett last week, he pretty much painted the picture pretty accurately. I mean, they had grandiose plans to run and run fast. And I think what we saw in week one against New England were the beginnings of what we were going to see that offense become. And they ran an awful lot of plays in that game and, you know, lost a tough decision by just 2 points in the opener. And that was the path that that offense was going to take. But in week five, it went off the rails when EJ got hurt, and you had an inexperienced backup in Thad Lewis who had to come onto the field and who really, for those that forget, had only been here for all of a month since they made the trade right at the end of the preseason last year to get him in here from Detroit. So his time in the offense was supremely limited, and so the package of plays had to be smaller, and the thought of running it at high speed, it just wasn't going to happen. So that had to be sacrificed. Speed had to be sacrificed for efficiency. Then we know Thad got hurt in New Orleans. Jeff Toole's on the field. Then EJ's back in the lineup. And really, running at a high tempo went completely out the window pretty much for the rest of the season. Now those plans are back in the fold. And so EJ is not only going to be trying to run and make these pre-snap decisions on his own, he's also going to be doing them at a high rate of speed, making these decisions pretty quickly. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the phone number to get on with me on the John Murphy Show. Chris Brown here with you till 9 o'clock tonight. Coming up in our next hour, we are going to be talking to Mark Ludwizak, the editor from Bills Digest. He's been out there with me for several of the OTA practices. We'll get his thoughts on EJ and some of his added responsibilities and what he's seen on the practice field, along with your phone calls at 803-0550. This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And this crowd is on its feet, and it is pandemonium. And that's only the half of it.
He's got Goodwin open in the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown! Flash Goodwin!
I like this kind of party, baby!
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop CJ Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it?
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands.
This crowd is absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Chris Brown here with you, hour number two of the John Murphy Show. Stepping in for Murph, who is under the weather this week, and we're hoping he's feeling better and he'll be back sooner rather than later. But in the meantime, we are discussing Bills OTAs, we're discussing EJ Manuel, and Jonah in Cranberry Lake, Billy in Massachusetts. Hang on the line, we are going to take your calls in this segment. But first, we are going to get to the editor of Bills Digest, who is joining us live on the line right now. Mark Ludwizak is with us, who has been out there for pretty much all of the OTA practices. And we're going to discuss a little bit of what we are seeing out there. Mark, thanks for joining us. Good evening.
Sure. How you doing, Chris?
Doing okay. So there we were taking in Tuesday's OTA practice. And again, the defense had the better of the play, and the offense found it difficult to string positive plays together. Then after practice, EJ informs us that the coaches have thrown the book at the offense, basically handing them the balance of the playbook in preparation for the mandatory minicamp. How much did that quell any concerns you might have had with the execution you saw from the offense on Monday and Tuesday?
Yeah, like I know you touched on it earlier, but it's always something that I think all of us reporters have to maybe grapple with a little bit at this time of year, because they're not just going out there and game planning for a team that, you know, this is a installation process. It's mid-June. You know, we're not talking about September here. So you know that they're tinkering with things, lineups, plans, plays. So it factors into it. Would it be more reassuring if EJ had performed better the last 4 days now, or four practices? Yeah, it would be, but I think in the back of your mind, we all know that they're working on stuff. So I don't think it's all doom and gloom, but it would have been nice if he looked a little better. But at the same time, like you said, they're installing stuff now, so it's going to be part of the process, I think, with a second-year quarterback still learning the ropes.
Right. EJ revealed, you know, that Coach Hackett's given him more rope when it comes to their package plays, changing stuff at the line pre-snap, you know, something he apparently – or pretty obviously did not have a ton of leeway with last season. So I think we all expected there to be another step here in terms of the amount of responsibility that EJ was going to be handed. How necessary do you think that component of the offense is for it to be successful this season? I mean, package plays are the in vogue thing now, it seems, in the league.
Yeah, I mean, I think in today's NFL, it is absolutely 100% necessary because just in the last 5-10 years, we've seen just how much both offenses and defenses have evolved, and just how many things change on the fly. I mean, it's really, I believe, different in, you know, in that approach compared to 5, 10, 15 years ago when, you know, normally you had a play and you had an audible and you go up there and do it. But I think you need to have more control. I think now is the right time to do it. If they put too much on his plate last year, who knows what would have happened. He didn't want to throw him too much as a rookie. So, yeah, now's the time to see if he can sink or swim, because certainly you want your quarterback to have the option to get in and out of good plays whenever needed.
And I don't know where you come down on this. Bills Digest editor Mark Ludwizak, our guest here on the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. I mean, I have confidence that EJ can get the team in the right play, and oftentimes with the packaged plays, you know, if he elects to change to a pass, it's typically a short pass, so the decision-making post-snap is minimal. But where are you on the confidence meter of EJ being able to diagnose pre-snap and make changes accordingly?
Well, I mean, as far as diagnosing, it seems like he's got a better handle just on everything overall this year, from a body language standpoint to talking with the media afterwards. He does seem more comfortable. I think there's a little more of an air of confidence there. But that said, it all comes down to how he actually performs on the field. He could be as confident as anybody, but if he's not hitting the right throw on 3rd and 8, and, you know, putting enough on it on an out pattern with the game on the line, it's not really going to matter in the end. So I think he's got a better handle of it in his second year, just with everything. But at the same time, we need to see more consistency. I think leading up to this four-day stretch when he struggled, he had probably his two best days of the spring
right
on the field, and then he struggled the last four. So, again, we take it with a grain of salt because they're installing things, and I do think he's been more confident. I do think the body language has been better, but it still comes down to consistency on the field for me, and we're still waiting for it.
As promised, we're going to take some phone calls in this segment, so Mark and I can kind of answer some of the questions you might have about OTAs or about EJ and the play calling. So at 803-0550, feel free to chime in. We're going to start here with Billy in Massachusetts. Billy, you're on with Mark Ludwizak and Chris Brown. Good evening.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing all right.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that EJ Manuel and, you know, his confidence, just the way he talks, you know, is, you know, a lot about him just, you know, might kind of fool some people sometimes into thinking, you know, he's a great athlete. And, you know, I, you know, watching all the, you know, his interviews and a lot of different stuff about him, you know, I'm finding it to be very promising. I'm excited, looking forward to it, but it all comes down to that, you know, the final execution and
right
what they got me, you know, they're talking about the accuracy issues, and I'm getting a little scared because we have what it takes. We have the wide receivers, but, you know, we have everything we need. I that's what I think personally. You know, we've got those to get Watkins. They're going all in on this guy. So, you know, if EJ doesn't work out and we need a quarterback next year, you know, what are we going to do? We got Thad Lewis behind him. And I'm actually a pretty big Thad Lewis fan myself. I really like him. One of my favorite plays from the year, I don't know if you can remember, against Cincinnati, Thad Lewis to Marquise Goodwin. Yeah, I don't know if you remember that, but that's one of my favorite plays.
Tied the game
in the
fourth quarter, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you got just a little bit on the fence about it right now.
No, it's understandable, Billy, and we thank you for the call. I think what we're looking at there, Mark, is a situation where I think we all need to just see more. We need to see more of it rather than hear about it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's what, June 11th? June 11th heading into his second year. I think this is exactly the conversation that we should be having right now because we've seen some moments of very strong potential, and then we've seen others where it's like, okay, you know, is this any better than what we had before? So, yeah, we need to see more. We've seen some good signs. We've seen some bad signs. Right now, we just need to see more. And in June, heading into a second year, I think that's about what we can expect right now.
Let's go back to the phones at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. We're going to go to Jonah in Cranberry Lake. Jonah, you're on the John Murphy Show presented by Noco. Good evening.
Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering how Dustin Hopkins has looked in OTAs and if he has a realistic chance at making the roster.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be an interesting development here, Jonah, no question about it. I think, you know, this is a guy that had to come off a very, very lengthy rehab from a torn groin muscle, which for a kicker, and it was on his kicking leg side, is not one that you want to have. That's a bad injury for a kicker. And I talked to him on locker cleanout day, and he told me then he was still rehabbing. So, I mean, he obviously got clearance somewhere after the season was over because he's full go now in the practice setting. But, Mark, I think you'll agree with me here. We saw some early rust there the first time the kickers went out to do kickoffs when he's, you know, golfing, you know, the equivalent of worm burners on kickoffs there about 8 feet off the ground on a line.
Yeah, there were some that weren't the prettiest, I think, when they got going with that. But, yeah, with him, it's going to be all about the leg strength and if he's healthy enough. Because, I mean, let's face it, he's not going to be pushing for field goal duties after what Dan Carpenter did last year. So he really needs to prove his worth on kickoffs and kickoffs only. And it looks like he's still got a ways to go. I mean, when healthy, he had good leg strength last year, but we'll see.
And I liked what I saw the second time through. I mean, the first time they were doing kickoffs, he and Carpenter, it wasn't so hot. But I think after knocking off that early rust, he certainly showed the power that his leg can offer after that. I mean, I was writing him down. I mean, it was 10 yards past the end line. I mean, it wasn't 10 yards deep and hitting the end line. It was 10 yards past that. And they were kicking outside. And there was a little tailwind behind him and Dan Carpenter that day. But I had like 10 yards out of bounds, 8 yards out of bounds, 5 yards past the end line. I mean, he was clearing the end line with ease. And with all the talk, you know, that Doug Marrone has had this offseason and Coach Crossman has had about how they want to up the level of special teams with a veteran core and talented players, you know, if he can consistently demonstrate that he will have a high percentage of touchbacks that's among the league leaders, you know, Marrone is not going to rule out carrying two kickers on this roster.
Yeah, and I don't think they should rule it out because, again, we saw how they struggled at times in coverage, both on punts and kickoffs, and if you can eliminate the return, that's a big advantage. So, I mean, yeah, I think he'll get his fair shot in camp, but, again, with him, it's about proving he's healthy, and again, consistency. You know, that was his issue last year at camp as well.
Let's go back to the phones at 803-0550, where we do have an open line for you. But in the meantime, we go to Nick in Buffalo. Nick, you are on the John Murphy Show, presented by Noco with Chris Brown and Mark Ludwizek. How you doing?
Good. Nice to talk to you guys. Listen, I got two questions. Number one, who's the most accurate quarterback that you've seen in camp? And number two, does Lewis still throw a 10-yard swing pass at 80 miles an hour? That really bugged me. I'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for the call, Nick. I think, I don't know where you are on this, Mark, but I think each of the quarterbacks have had their moments. But I think at the same time, they've all battled the consistency issue. And I think that's what has been the main reason why the offense at this point in time is behind the defense. And yeah, Thad Lewis probably throws it harder than any of the quarterbacks here. Can he throw it the furthest? I think EJ probably has him beat there. But when it comes to pure velocity, you're absolutely right, Nick. You know, sometimes Thad only does know one speed, and taking a little bit off sometimes is easier for the other quarterbacks than it is for him. Now, I will say this, and I know I talked to you about this because I was standing next to you when it happened. Jeff Toole, in Tuesday's practice, probably had the two best throws of the entire day, and they came on back-to-back plays. Both were touchdown passes. One was a skinny post to Mike Williams, and then the other one was a post on the other side of the field to Tony Moiaki. And the one that he threw to Mike Williams, it's the first time I've really ever seen Toole throw a ball hard into a tight window and stick it in there. And that's what made me take note of it, and I starred the play in my notebook. But those are the two best throws I saw on Tuesday.
Yeah, that was a heck of a throw. The touchdown to Mike Williams, like you said on that post, that was probably the best thrown ball we saw all week, I'd say. So, again, a good moment from him. All those guys need a little more consistency. But it was nice to see on a day where EJ and some of the other guys had the struggles, it was nice to see Tool throw a couple good ones there in the red zone.
And I think, too, Thad, people look at Thad, when you watch him throw, it looks like he's putting everything on the ball. And I think what makes the ball come out of his hands so great is he's got that true 12-6 delivery that you don't really see that much anymore in NFL quarterbacks. I mean, EJ's got such long arms that his delivery looks long and elaborate, where Thad has a much more compact delivery, so it looks like it's coming out faster. I don't know that it is necessarily, but it just looks pretty coming out of Thad's hand. And when he's got that spiral going deep, I mean, it looks like a torpedo out there. It's fun to watch.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, he's not as big as EJ, so obviously his release is going to not be as elongated. That's kind of the deal with him.
Chris Brown and Bill's Digest editor Mark Ludwizak with you here on the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. 803-0550, the phone number. We're going to go back to the phones, and joining us from the east side is Butch. Butch, glad to have you with us. How you doing?
Chris, taking my call, and great to see you and Mark. You know, I just really want to just piggyback on something you said about the quarterback situation there. Prior to Jeff Tool, I mean, I like Jeff Tool. I mean, I'm just saying, I just like what they drafted DJ Manuel, brought Jeff Tool, and the two rookies. Both of them were all last year. Both of them made a lot of mistakes, and both of them showed a couple signs of something good. I just like that we just stick with them, and I like the way the organization stuck with what they believe in prior to these young guys. And I really believe it's going to prove people wrong in the long run, that we're going to solidify that position starting this year. So, I just want people just to relax and enjoy. Right now we have a roster that I don't see any holes in, and I think finally for the first time that I know that we're really not missing anything, but just letting them just actually play and just prove themselves on the field. So just I want all the fans just to keep your spirits high and just love the team and love the organization. But thanks, Chris, for taking my call. You and Mark, and I love you guys, man. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Butch, for the call there. I think what we have to remember is and Mark said this already, but, we're sitting here in June. And, I'm going to have as many concerns as the next guy if things don't look exactly right. But I'm willing to wait until we get to real football. I think it's clear the direction this organization is headed. And so it's EJ all the way. And he's the one that's going to have to convince them that they have to go in another direction, because nobody else is going to at this point in time. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 if you're calling from out of town here on the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We're going to go to Joe, who wants to talk a little bit on Sammy Watkins. Joe, what do you have for us?
I just got a comment, and I know it's probably gone over a few times, but do you think Ralph Wilson, if he was alive, would have okayed that trade in the first round to move up for Sammy Watkins?
Wow. Joe, I don't know. That's a tough one. You want to take a stab at that one, Mark?
I mean, I don't know how to answer.
I will defer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's certainly a bold move. I don't think Mr. Wilson was ever averse to making a bold move if he felt it could make a difference for his football team, and knowing how badly he wanted to get back to the postseason, I think he could be convinced of that being the right move. I mean, let's not forget his, his late daughter convinced him to take a Clemson receiver back in the late 1970s in Jerry Butler, up very high in the draft. I think he was pick 5 overall. So, they had the pick at the time. They didn't have to move up to get it. And I think we saw, Tom Donahoe convince Mr. Wilson that, they were going to trade up out of the second round into the bottom of the first and try to get a quarterback in J.P. Lossman. Obviously, it didn't work out. But I think Mr. Wilson over the years had proven that if there was a move that they felt stood a good chance of improving the football team, they weren't afraid to take a risk. And so because of that, yeah, I could see Mr. Wilson being on board with the move that they made in this most recent draft. I don't think you could rule that out at all. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. So, you know, as we're wrapping up OTAs here, Mark, what concerns might you still have about the team as we kind of put a bow on OTAs coming up here on Thursday? What answers might you still not have just 5 weeks from training camp?
Sure. Well, I think, you know, one of the problems with OTAs for observers is that, you know, when you're looking at positions like defensive line, offensive line, guard, linebackers, you know, because there isn't full contact and, you know, a whole lot of physicality going on because they can't, you know, we talked about the run defense and all those issues and the changes they made at linebacker. I think those are certainly players that we're going to want to watch at training camp and see how they evolve. Because on paper, you had guys like Brandon Spikes and Keith Rivers, and I think the Bills did a good job on paper of addressing their biggest problem, at least on defense, the last couple of years. But is it really going to be that much improved? We won't be able to know until August and September. So I think that is certainly something to watch come training camp. And then the obvious one is Manuel. And then we'll, you know, we'll see, can he be consistent? Because it's all on him this year, for better or worse. And, you know, the Bills are all in on him, and they've certainly surrounded him with weapons. I think Watkins and Mike Williams have been very strong throughout OTAs when we're watching those guys. But they're just going to need the QB to deliver day in and day out, and we won't know until he gets that opportunity in August and September.
Right, and that's actually why I'm glad. That's one of the few reasons why I'm glad the Bills have an extra preseason game, you know, with this Hall of Fame game. It's an extra chance for EJ, you know, to be exposed to as close to a real regular season game setting as possible. I mean, this is, you know, a guy that they want to get as many snaps as they can, and, you know, having the opportunity to go against another NFL team in a preseason game setting, I mean, I think the coaching staff's got to be very happy that they get that opportunity with him out there on the field.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we might groan about it a bit, but
yeah,
training camp,
a little bit.
Is 5 weeks. Training camp is 5 weeks long, so they're going to have, you know, more practices and extra preseason game. You know, there will be plenty of time to try and sort out as many issues as possible.
All right, I'm kind of putting you on the spot with this one, but do you have maybe a top three all OTA group here, three players that, you know, you feel have helped themselves the most through the 3 weeks of OTAs that we've had at this point?
Good question. I mean, I'd probably have to start with some of the new guys. I mean, I think early on, Watkins was the showstopper. You just watch him out there, and it's obvious from day one why they drafted him. I remember, I think it was late last week when he had, you know, quote, his maybe poorest day thus far, and it was only because he dropped two passes. Two, you know?
Yeah.
The guy catches everything. I mean, if that's what we're talking about, being a bad day, the Bills are probably in pretty good shape with him. Then I'd also have to add Corey Graham to that list. You know, we saw a couple days ago he had two interceptions during the teamwork. And it just looks like he's a player. He just looks like he knows what's going on when he's on that field. I like personally that the Bills are keeping him at corner. We know what happens when injuries hit cornerback. I think it's more important to have depth and value there than at safety, just in general. That's kind of how I've always viewed the secondary. And maybe Mike Williams for the other one. Again, you know, I know they're all new guys, but I think they've all looked pretty good so far. You know, when the pads are flying, we'll see if that changes. But those would probably be my top three to date.
And then just to get a plug in, and I'm hoping you know the calendar better than I do, when does the training camp preview issue for Bill's Digest come out? I mean, it's right around the end of the month here, right?
Yeah, I know we're printing at the end of June. So, you know, give or take a couple of days, our pre-training camp issue, it's always a big one. We always have a lot of position analysis in there. Should be out that first week of July. So it'll be out on newsstands and online then.
All right. That sounds good. Mark, thanks for joining us tonight and painting a little clearer picture of some of these OTAs. I'll see you out there tomorrow.
Sounds good. See you, Chris.
All right. Bills Digest editor Mark Ludwizak kind of painting the picture of OTAs and what he's seen out there on the field. We'll take your phone calls, though, in our next segment. As coming up with your phone calls, we'll dig a little bit deeper into this whole EJ thing and him having these expanded responsibilities of calling plays at the line. Coach Hackett giving him that. And who rattles the cage for the offense in the huddle? We will explore that when we come back on the John Murphy Show. Presented by NOCO, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Chris Brown with you back on the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. As we are cruising through the second hour of the program, Chris Brown in for John Murphy, who is under the weather this week. We wish Murphy a speedy recovery. We just had Mark Ludwizak, the Bills Digest editor, on the line, and we were kind of hashing out some of the developments that we saw in OTAs. And really, in the grand scheme of things, it's still not real football. And so really what you try to do is kind of gauge the skill position players and where they are and what kind of development they have. And so it usually becomes an exercise in receiver slash tight end slash cornerback slash safety evaluations. You can make some judgments on linebackers in terms of how well they can cover and get sideline to sideline. But really for those offensive and defensive linemen, it's very difficult to make any kind of judgments or evaluations on those kinds of players. But at the quarterback position, you can certainly determine whether an offensive, the grasp that EJ or Jeff Toole or Thad Lewis has of the offense. And I think everything that we've seen from EJ pre-snap has been very encouraging, whether he is handling, making a change at the line, you know, on packaged plays, demonstratively gesturing to teammates at the line, you know, especially to the receivers out wide, as to what is going on, what is he seeing, and what he is changing a play to. I think the one thing that some fans wonder about watching EJ play is the way in which he is cool, calm, and collected, almost to a point where they say to themselves, does this guy ever get ticked off about anything? Or what's his level of anger, if he even has any? And I think EJ's so committed to the position that he knows that everybody else is looking at him. And I think Coach Marone made that very clear to him last season, because Coach Marone had told the media at one point in time that he talked long and hard to EJ about his body language. Because if EJ comes off the field after a three and out with his shoulders drooped, that's going to have an impact on the rest of the offensive unit. And so I think he and Coach Marone had a long discussion about that, and I think EJ got that message completely. But there were questions this week when EJ stepped up to the mic about when to maybe show some passion, when to dial up the intensity, and how to balance showing frustration with developing the kind of enthusiasm and intensity that you want on offense. So here is EJ now on showing passion.
I'm a passionate guy, so I don't think it's a body language of discouragement. I think it's more so just expecting a lot from our offense. You know, like I said, yeah, we're putting in a lot of offense, we're putting in a lot of plays, but, you know, I have a sense of urgency just like the rest of us do. You know, so when things aren't going well or how we want them to in the practice, it is frustrating. But, you know, same thing, you have another practice tomorrow to correct it.
At quarterback, EJ, how do you balance the challenge of being the calm, cool, collected guy out there on the field for your offense, and then at the same time, maybe dialing up a little dose of intensity for the group if you feel it's wrong?
Yeah, I think intensity is good. I think that's what we need, especially on the offense. I mean, so many times the defense is an aggressive, you know, has an aggressive nature. And I think that's something I want our offense to have, you know, an attacking nature to go out there and, you know, apply pressure, not, you know, take pressure on from a defense. So I think intensity is fine. I think us being passionate about, you know, the practice field, you know, trying to treat it like a game, I think that's important for us.
And I think some fans automatically think that EJ, if he sees the enthusiasm of the group waning a little bit, because maybe they've had two, three, or four plays that haven't gone very well, that he's got to throw a charge into those guys. And in a conversation that I had with Eric Wood earlier this week, which did appear on the John Murphy Show, I believe on Tuesday, really, I thought Eric painted a good picture of the situation at play there. He said, look, when we're in that situation where there needs to be a shot in the arm for the offensive unit because maybe we're not operating at peak efficiency or we're a little off in terms of our effectiveness, he said the people in the huddle that will handle that and rattle the cage, so to speak, will either be himself, Eric Wood, or Fred Jackson if he's in the huddle. And it makes sense. Those guys were two offensive co-captains. I think both of those guys are pretty intense players on the field. And when they say something, it's going to stick and people are going to listen. And I said, well, what about EJ? And he said, well, the reason it's not EJ is because he's getting the next play in his ear in the helmet. And so he's trying to get that and process that to deliver to the huddle in the next couple of seconds. He doesn't have time to charge up the offense. So it falls to Eric Wood and Fred Jackson, as Eric has communicated it to us. So I think EJ has passion. I think there's no question that he wants to excel as a quarterback in this league and do well for this offense and in turn this team. But I think at the same time, there are so many job responsibilities that he has that in the moment, firing up a team with a fist pump or something like that, or shouting at a team in a huddle, there's just no time to do that, especially when you consider the speed at which they want to run this offense. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the phone number to call to get on board here. Talk EJ, talk Bills OTAs. Joining us now on the line is Frank in Amherst. Frank, you're on the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Good evening.
Hey, Chris. I wanted to talk about EJ and then the offensive coordinator. EJ last year, you know, I know it was his rookie season, and I'm expecting big things for him for this year, but just had a question for you, and maybe, you know, you noticed it as well as I did, but I thought that his handoffs to the running backs was a little bit suspect, meaning it was a little slow. Because I felt like Spiller kind of got going when AJ went down, and I was wondering if that's something you might have saw.
I'll be honest. I didn't really notice that as a problem area. You know, I think there are some plays that are slower to develop than others. That's just natural. But I didn't really see that. I mean, I think what's deceiving about EJ, and again, we go back to his physical size. I mean, when he throws the football, it doesn't look like he's winding up and getting it out quick. It's because his arm's so long and his delivery is so elaborate that it doesn't look like he's firing it out and gunning the thing. But there's velocity on the ball, and he absolutely gets distance on the ball. The same thing, I think, is when he drops back. I mean, this is such a long-limbed guy that when he turns and drops, it doesn't look like he's covering ground or he's delivering a handoff quickly. But I don't think we really saw all that many execution issues when it came to the exchange between EJ and the backs. I can only recall one ball that maybe went on the ground, and I'm not going to remember the game. But there was a mishandled exchange there, and it was on a read option play where he was trying to pull it out, and the back thought he was giving it to him, and there was a misfire there. But, I mean, as far as the speed of the handoffs, you're really, really whittling it down to some details there. I really didn't see that as a problem issue. So, I mean, for me, I think he's fine when he's executing those. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 to get on the line here on the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We will go back to the phones. We'll go to Wes in Naples, Florida. Wes, you are on the line. Welcome to the John Murphy Show.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
My question is, I've always heard that quarterbacks throw to specific locations. How much of that is factoring in with EJ when you're watching him? Does it look like he's throwing it to a certain spot in the field that the receiver is supposed to be?
Yeah, he is. This is a landmark-oriented offense. And so for the receivers, what they've done this year is they've made it very step-oriented with the routes. They're trying to improve the precision to reduce the margin for error in the passing game. I mean, the passing game was 28th in the league last year. I think we're all going to agree that's just not good enough. And it's got to take a big jump forward. And once again, here is an example of how they're trying to help EJ in the process of progressing into a difference-making quarterback. And so what they've done is they've taken the entire receiving core, and with new receivers coach Rob Moore, they've got these receivers step-oriented in their routes. So their footwork aligns with EJ or whoever the quarterback is, their footwork. So if it's a five-step drop for the quarterback, there's also an assigned number of steps for each receiver in their respective route for that play. You know, it could be a 12-step route. It could be a 15-step route. It all depends on what route they are running. But there is a specificity assigned to the way in which they're going to run it. And it's going to be uniform every time so that when EJ throws to a spot, he has the confidence that that receiver is going to be there. And so to answer your question, yes, a lot of times he is throwing to a spot in anticipation of the receiver executing his route properly. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 to get on board here on the John Murphy Show as we are talking EJ Manuel's game here and what we've seen thus far in OTAs, the added responsibility that is being put on his plate as he is getting expanded freedom to make pre-snap decisions with packaged plays in Nathaniel Hackett's offense. Really, this package play approach is kind of a necessary thing now in the NFL if you are going to be successful and keep defenses on their heels. Add in the fact that they're going to be running it at a high rate of speed, and I think you can understand the challenge at play here, not just for EJ, but for any quarterback, in processing all of that in what is in essence going to be a lightning round kind of atmosphere. And as I said earlier in the show, I think EJ is fine pre-snap in making those decisions and making the right decisions and doing them with authority and assertiveness. I think it's right now, it's after the snap where EJ has a hurdle to still clear. At times he gets it and the play looks great. At other times, his decision-making after everything is unfolding and the coverages are rotating, that's when he's maybe not as consistent in asserting where he wants to go with the football. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. I think the best thing, though, moving forward here is everyone believes in EJ on this roster, offense and defense for that matter. The coaching staff is obviously behind him. I just think for fans to be convinced, they understandably just need to see more. And I get that. I mean, 10 starts is a very limited and finite amount of evidence as to what type of NFL quarterback EJ Manuel can be. And it's not a 10-game segment from his fourth season in the league. We're talking his first 10 games in the NFL. It's simply not enough for anyone to go on. We all need to see more, and we will see more in training camp. Heck, we're going to get an extra preseason game out of it before the real ones even count. So it's all going to be beneficial to getting a better handle on just how far EJ is set to come and the steps he's set to make here in year two. We will be back for one last segment here on the John Murphy Show. Chris Brown here with you, still taking your phone calls right up until 9 o'clock. It's here on the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Chris Brown here with you on the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. One last segment here before we call it a night. And, you know, we've been talking about EJ for most of the evening here and how he's got more responsibility on his plate with some of these pre-snap checks that he's going to have the freedom to change plays with. And, you know, it's part of this new approach to offense in the NFL that's becoming more and more popular. And Doug Marrone and Nathaniel Hackett brought it with them from Syracuse. And I think when it's working at optimum efficiency, it is a very effective thing. I think one complaint that we often heard from fans last year, I know I did, just in the feedback I was getting, was that the offense was too predictable. It was one of the highest run percentage teams on first down in the league. I think they peaked just after midseason last year at about 62%. So 62% of the time the Bills were running on first down, it was one of the highest percentages in football, in a league that's supposedly going towards passing more and more every year. I don't have a problem with that, especially when they were second in the league in rushing. But I understand where the fans are coming from in saying, hey, this is too predictable. Can we throw on first down? What you have to remember are the circumstances that the Bills were in last year. Yes, they were predictable because they were limited with what they could turn to offensively because of all the quarterback shuffling that took place last year. Running is what they did most effectively. It's what they did most consistently. And so they turned to that, even though most of the time defenses knew that that was coming. So was it predictable? Yes, but it was the best chance they had to stay in favorable down and distance at the time. And that's why there is this giant push to help EJ progress, surround him with weapons, give him more freedom to change plays in the offense, build him a bigger offensive line, expand the level of talent at running back, so if there is an injury, there's still a running game that you can lean on. All of those things are going to help EJ, you know, in the grand scheme of things. And so what you have, if EJ can handle the extra responsibility he's been given and then take those responsibilities and not only make the right call, but then execute them as well, what we get in the end is a more unpredictable defense. And now you're putting defenses on their heels. And what you have as a result is a much more effective offense, a much more productive offense, and you're off and running. And now your defense doesn't have to bail you out every Sunday and hold every team to under 17 points to give you a remote chance of winning. So those are the steps that need to be taken here by the offense, and obviously EJ is at the center of that to no one's surprise. Listen, everybody, I thank you for joining me tonight as I stepped in for John Murphy. I will be back tomorrow to do the abbreviated version of the John Murphy Show, as Murph is still on the mend this week. So we will have an abbreviated show because of the NBA Finals, which will be here on WGR 550. But be sure to be back here tomorrow at 7 o'clock when I will be back with you to put a bow on the OTAs as they come to a close tomorrow. We'll hear from Coach Marone and players here on the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Good night, everybody.